Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 16th of July 2021. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And your readers today are David Baldwin.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Farah Williams. The main headlines this week are Appeal by Jailed School Bus Driver, A Roman Amphitheatre Under Silver Hill Site, and New Plans Submitted for Bar End Car Park. And I'm going to read the first one. Appeal by Jailed School Bus Driver. A bus driver who crashed a double-decker full of schoolchildren into a railway bridge despite pupils' warning cries plans to appeal his jail sentence. 41 children were injured, three of whom suffered life-changing injuries after the roof of the bus was ripped off. Martin Robert Walker, 37, was jailed for 3 years at Winchester Crown Court on Friday after he pleaded guilty to three counts of causing serious injury by dangerous driving. However, an appeal against his sentence has now been lodged with the Court of Appeal. 72 pupils were on board the bus en route to Henry Beaufort Secondary School when the crash occurred in Wellhouse Lane, Headbourne Worthy, on September the 10th last year. Prosecuting Nicholas Cotter said that Walker, who suffers from special educational needs, was an experienced driver of double-decker buses but had not driven the route before. He continued, "He was made aware through a familiarisation trip of the route he was required to take and why. The day of the collision was the first occasion that this defendant had ridden the school route." The court was told that Walker, of Burke Drive, Southampton, was only partially shown the route and decided not to drive during the training. Mitigating, Neil Fitzgibbon said that Walker suffers from poor planning, confusion of left and right, and needs to be constantly reminded of basic elements of his job. He continued, "The defendant was unaware he missed his turning as a consequence of believing he was on the correct route. He wrongly assumed he would fit under the bridge. Moments before the crash, Walker stopped to let another driver through, but seemingly put no heed to height restrictions or signage on the route towards the bridge. The bus was 13 feet and 11 inches high, but the bridge was only 12 feet. Despite children warning the driver, he continued through the tunnel and the top of the bus was ripped off." Mr. Cotter said the incident caused the entirety of the roof of the bus to be removed, and those in vehicles behind saw the top of the bus drop on the floor in front of them. "It is frightfully lucky that not more harm was not done." He said one schoolgirl described the bus as powering through the tunnel. He added, "She recalls the children sitting in front of her ducking down as the roof of the bus collapsed in towards her. She recalls screaming and shouting and people jumping off the side of the bus to get off." A list of the children's injuries was read out, including the three victims to whom the charges related, who have been left with permanent scarring and nerve damage. Mr. Cotter said that the children continue to suffer with anxiety, with one of the girls saying she tried to kill herself. Following Walker's sentence, DC Kate Paling of the Serious Collision Investigation Unit said, "Mr. Walker's driving clearly fell far below that of a competent and careful driver, and it was obvious to all the students on the bus that the vehicle would not fit below the bridge. This was a serious misjudgment on Walker's part, and a moment of carelessness had drastic consequences." A spokesperson for Stagecoach South said, the thoughts of everybody at Stagecoach remain with the children affected by the accident and their families. Safety is our first priority, and we fully supported the police investigation. We can confirm that the driver involved in this incident has been dismissed. Every year, Stagecoach invests millions of pounds in training its professional driving team, as well as new technology to protect passengers. We're committed to learning lessons from this incident to make our public transport operations even safer. In January, Stagecoach announced it will roll out new Bridge Alert technology across its fleet. The spokesperson said that moves to invest in the technology preceded the Winchester incident, and the project will be completed later this year. Henry Beaufort School was contacted for comment.
The next article poses the question, is there a Roman amphitheatre under the Silver Hill site? The foremost expert on Roman Winchester, Professor Martin Biddle, has called for full archaeological excavations in part of the Silver Hill area. The City Council is currently not planning such work, saying initial work has not revealed anything exciting. Professor Biddle writes, was there a Roman amphitheatre in Winchester? Almost certainly, yes, but we don't know where it was. In the Winchester Excavation Committee's 1,000-page, two-volume book on Roman Winchester, we record over 120 sites inside the ancient walls where Roman remains have been found. But there's not a trace of the curved walls which would be the sign of a Roman amphitheatre. Could it lie within the central Winchester regeneration area? We don't know, although we do know that this area comprising the valley floor was fully utilised in the Roman period when the water level was much lower than today. The area is divided north to south by Tanner Street. The area west of Tanner Street we know quite well as a result of both WEC and WMS excavations. While there may not be much more to learn about this area, it remains vital that any new buildings should be designed to cause the least possible disturbance of the archaeology and that all unavoidable impacts, for example lift shafts, service trenches, should be archaeologically excavated as a planning condition. The area east of Tanner Street is a very different matter, as I believe there had been very little or no archaeological excavation of this area. We have some outline knowledge of the situation from sparse documentary evidence from the late 13th century onwards. The medieval occupation of this area seems to have been limited, and there has been relatively little medieval disturbance of the whole area up to the city walls. There is some disturbance to the south in the back areas of buildings on the north side of the Broadway and some along the various smaller lanes to the east. But in general, very little dense medieval activity, which means relatively little digging of medieval pits, wells and other disturbances of the underlying Roman deposits. Because there has been little large-scale building in that area in medieval and in modern times, the Roman remains that will certainly be there, houses, desolated pavements and even Roman public buildings, will be exceptionally well preserved. The regeneration area will therefore be of special importance for the archaeology of Roman Winchester. Remote sensing and boreholes can provide some information about subterranean conditions, but the detail they deliver on archaeological remains is deficient and imperfect. The only hope of getting a clear view of the archaeology within the site is by digging, and I suggest that 5 or 6 large open areas of, say, at least 10 metres by 20 metres should be excavated, widely distributed over the area as a whole. These should give us some real knowledge of what to expect and how the development of the area can be managed by the council to preserve the archaeology as well as might be possible. The city has waited some years for the council to progress work within the central Winchester regeneration area, but the opportunity to investigate an area with so much archaeological potential is truly unique. And how wonderful and invigorating for the city would it be if we did find the amphitheatre or other buildings of significance? The advancement of our knowledge and the tourist potential of putting artefacts and structures on public display would be considerable. But however the site is later developed, the most important thing is that we first accurately establish what riches might lie beneath.
New plans submitted for Bar End Car Park. Winchester City Council has reinforced its plans to build a multi-story in Bar End. As previously reported, residents of Domham Road have taken the council for a judicial review after its plans for a huge park and ride were approved. The legal decision is yet to be made, but civic chiefs have already submitted another application. Winchester City Councillor Martin Todd explained, "The new park and ride spaces in Barfield Close are a vital part of the City of Winchester movement strategy to cut congestion and improve air quality in the city centre. As part of ensuring that the project will continue to be delivered on time, following the application for a judicial review, the council has submitted a second planning application. The new application is similar to the initial one. On behalf of Domham Road residents, Mr. Michael Hurd said, Dr. Michael Hurd said, the council has put in a new planning application, as they must be concerned the decision will be quashed. However, it is really no different from the previous one, in terms of size, visual impact, and environmental issues of light and noise. You are also aware that foundation works have commenced, so they are going forward at risk. It is important that this goes to committee again, in the hope of reducing the effect on the South Downs National Park, the immediate locality, and the wildlife. As the local residents, we are seeking that the new planning application is altered in the following areas. To remove the top floor, so it is a two and not three-storey building. To infill the west wall, rather than it being open and covered with ivy. This would remove the light factor over the water meadows and reduce noise and pollution. To ensure the trees around the structure are mature and preferably evergreen, and to close the car park at night in line with police recommendation. I believe these requests are not unreasonable and would make a major difference. Ken Day, a Domham Road resident who has been at the centre of the campaign, said there is nervousness amongst the council. The council, have chosen to lodge a further planning application. It is clear evidence of that, he said. Having already admitted to their response to the judicial filing that they were responsible for errors in the original application, I would have thought that the council would have at least made an effort to arbitrate and attempt to settle out of court. Us Domham Road residents are prepared to seriously consider mitigating features that would allow the project to continue without further redress.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bartlett, Joy Bartlett, peacefully, aged 80. Cop, Dr. Martin Cop of Ringwood, after an illness. Coram, Nora Jean Coram, aged 96, the last of the seven Byrne sisters of Bar End. Dawson, Nancy Joan Dawson, peacefully, aged 103. Griffin, David Griffin, suddenly, aged 83, following a fall at home. Hillier, Rhoda Daphne Hillier, aged 88. Quinnell, Kay Quinnell, peacefully at home, aged 82. Shepherd, Martin Michael Shepherd, aged 77. Slater, Eileen Slater, greatly missed by all. Stutley, Jenny Christine Stutley, aged 74. And finally, Wells, Geoffrey Brian Wells, Army Major retired, aged 77. And now, David, could we please have Christian comment?
Yes, this week the Reverend Philip Crinks writes the Christian comment, which is entitled Freedom 2. Monday is the revised date for step 4 in the government's phased easing of COVID-19 restrictions. From the start, it has had a snappier name, Freedom Day. Many of us are excited about the possibilities of restored freedoms. It's a good time to think about what we're going to do with them. There are two ways to look at freedom. In the contemporary West, we emphasise freedom from. We value each individual's right to shape their own life. Christians played their part in this, following Jesus, who said he had come to set the oppressed free. We have rightly fought against slavery, drawing on biblical understandings going right back to the freeing of the Israelites from Egypt. Even today in Hampshire, the Kluwer Initiative continues to battle against modern slavery. But the emphasis on freedom from has had unforeseen consequences. It has led to power ebbing from traditional social structures and from civil society institutions. While some of that power rests with individuals, much has been taken up by large companies and the secular state. Closer to home, if we focus only on freedom from, we risk becoming separated from those with whom we share a common humanity, from neighbours near and far. We risk limiting our commitments and obligations. We also find that freedom from is in itself rather empty. It doesn't tell us how to use our freedom in order to live flourishing lives. It doesn't give us a frame for acknowledging that some of the things which oppress us are within our own hearts and souls, from the wounds of the past to the desire for status and affection. An additional concept of freedom we need is freedom too. This assumes we have a vision of flourishing as individuals and community. We know the kind of life we want to lead. We seek the freedom to explore it and to enter into the commitments and obligations which will realise it. Jesus offered us such a vision, which he said would bring us life, life in all its fullness. This involves the way of total forgiveness and self-giving, compassionate love. This way is about going much further in our commitment to each other than we would ever imagine. It is very far from suggesting we reduce that commitment. Monday's Freedom Day will restore freedom to us. It is up to us how we use it. We will have the freedom to continue the good things we discovered last year, from spending more time with family to more exercise. We will have the freedom to continue the mutual care between neighbours which has graced the last 18 months. We will have the freedom to decide to protect others by continuing to wear a mask in some situations and keeping our distance, and in other situations not to. If we use our freedom well to build a community in our city, towns and villages where all can flourish, we might find that it brings us closer together. If we can hear Christ's call and are willing to follow it, we might find that it is in serving him that we find perfect freedom. The Reverend Crinks is rector of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester.
And now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Frieda.
This letter is from Sarah Carter, and it's about health cuts. Sir, I qualified as a registered nurse in 1977, a lifetime ago. In 1986, I trained to be a health visitor. I felt strongly that so much of the illness and suffering I had witnessed as a nurse was preventable. The privileged job of a health visitor enabled me to actively work at preventing disease and reducing the impacts of health problems. I know that health visitors and school nurses make huge impacts on people's lives, impacts that are rarely reported, impacts that often affect those in society who have the least power, women and children. I will list just a few of these. The promoting of immunizations, promoting healthy lifestyles, diet, exercise, dental health, smoking cessation, identifying developmental delay, screening and support for those experiencing postnatal depression, support for families experiencing challenging behaviours from their children, safeguarding the vulnerable from abuse, enabling those feeling isolated to tap into local groups for support. The work was evidence-based, following the science. In this pandemic, women and children have suffered so much. The inequalities in society have increased. Removing yet more health professionals from the public health nursing service, as Hampshire County Council proposes, as told in the Chronicle on July the 8th, will lead to an increased in unmet health needs and is a false economy. Early prevention of a problem is not only morally right, it makes economic sense too. That was from Sarah Carter, Dibben Walk, Romsey.
Here's a letter entitled Outdoor Pool from Mike Sherwood. Sir, I was interested to read the letter from Stephen Perryman, Chronicle July the 1st, on the subject of an outdoor swimming pool in Winchester. Years ago, Winchester had two such pools. One was the Lido in Worthy Lane and the other was Bull Drove at St Cross, Riverwater. I usually used the Lido, and in the 1950s my brother and I were taught there how to swim by Mr Abraham, or was it Abrahams, using a crane and belt device. I recall that at one time you could buy a season ticket for a guinea, just over £1, which would entitle you to use the pool as often as you wanted to between the months of April and September. You could also buy wagon wheel biscuits from the refreshment kiosk, which were about triple the size of the Imposter of more recent years. Great value and great times. From Mike Sherwood, Wrights Close, South Wanstead.
Phil Yates also writes about the outdoor pool. Sir, with reference to Stephen Perryman's letter asking for a Lido swimming pool in Winchester, in the Chronicle on July 1st, the answer is it's still there, except it is now a car park. Go along Worthy Road from Andover Road and the car park is on the right-hand side with the premises behind which used to be the Lido or Lido ballroom. I remember trying to learn how to swim in the pool and much later dancing in the ballroom with my girlfriend, now my wife, to the music from famous dance bands such as Sid Phillips, Johnny Dankworth, etc. The Rolling Stones made one of their debut dates there in the early 1960s. Why not try the swimming pool in the new leisure centre at Bar End? Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Michael Warner. Action needed at Fatal Junction. Sir, I was so sorry to read of the death of cyclist David Davenport on the afternoon of June the 8th in Woodman Lane near Winchester. Over the years, I have cycled many times along the Sarum Road to Farley Mount. Unfortunately, because the road markings at the Woodman Lane Sarum Road junction have become virtually invisible, it is now a major hazard. In sharp contrast, the road markings at the junction of Sarum Road and Chilbelton Avenue are very clear, indicating a priority may have been given to safety on city roads over rural roads. The Woodman-Sarum Junction requires urgent attention to avoid another tragedy. That was from Michael Warner, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
This is about A&E services from Jill Thirkelson. She says, a tragedy in the making. It seems perfectly clear to me and many others that the decision taken by the NHS Foundation Trust for Hampshire Hospitals to move A&E and maternity services from Winchester to Basingstoke is ruthless and potentially harmful. This is of great concern to the people in the area relying on A&E services, which serve more than 122,000 people in the area, plus the surrounding communities, for example, Bishop's Waltham. Bishop's Waltham is 16.9 kilometres from Winchester, whereas from Bishop's Waltham to Basingstoke it is 43.3 kilometres, more than double the distance. It is obvious that this decision must be reversed. The people who have made this decision will be putting lives at risk as a result of the increased distance. This means people could die. I suggest the Trust think again before jeopardising people's lives. From Jill Thirkelson of Albany Court, Bishop's Waltham.
Peter Jacob sends his thanks. Sir, through your columns, I would like to express my thanks to whoever posted my wallet to me at their own expense after I dropped it somewhere in Chandler's Ford, I think, on Friday, June the 25th. It had my bank cards and driving licence in it, so I'm very grateful. I hope you have similar luck one day. Thanks again, Peter Jacob, Cathedral View, Highcliffe, Winchester.
This one is from Christopher Sharrett, and it's about road nimbies, not in my backyard. Sir, the letters and leaders which you have published recently, which are hostile to the redevelopment of Junction 9 of the M3, make the same points that were made by the Dongas tribe when they tried to obstruct work on Twyford Down in 1992, and by Swampy when he tried to obstruct work on the Newbury bypass in 1996. Can you imagine what traffic congestion and air pollution would have been like over the past 30 years for businesses and residents in and around Winchester, or for commuters stuck at Hockley traffic lights, if the M3 link south from Winnall had never been built? It hardly bears thinking about. When I visit relatives in the Midlands, the Lake District, or Scotland, it is wonderful to whiz past Newbury in a few minutes, instead of crawling through the town centre for 2 hours, which I experienced firsthand in the 1990s. Living in South Wanston, I often use the Tesco Extra at Winnall, but nowadays I always check the Traffic England website to see if the A34 southbound is stationary, and the sign which greets me as soon as I join the A34 warns that queues are likely for 3 miles all the way to Winnall. And that is common nowadays. I look forward to whizzing past Winchester in future when I head for Eastleigh, Southampton or Bournemouth, just as I whiz past Newbury. And remember that the A34 is the main artery of commerce between the ports of Southampton and Portsmouth and all points north. Winchester benefits from access to the motorway network, but nimbyism isn't confined to house building. It permeates attitudes to road building too. From Christopher Sharrett, Waverley Drive, South Wanston.
Wall collapse. From Edward Fennell, coordinator of Friends of Hyde Gate. The collapse of the wall adjacent to the Nun's Stream is the final indictment of the neglect of the physical fabric of Hyde Abbey Gateway area by successive city councils. Chronicle, July the 8th. This has been happening for many decades, but has been particularly acute recently. Following discussions at the town forum a fortnight ago, now is the time for officials and councillors alike to develop a long-term strategy for the proper understanding, care and development of the site. King Alfred would be turning in his grave, had it not already been churned over by a previous corporation's irresponsibility. And that was from Edward Fennell, Coordinator, Friends of Highgate, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire writes about Hampshire Day. Sir, I had hoped to be writing this letter to your paper with the country having moved into the next stage of the COVID lockdown roadmap and life beginning to get back to normal, but regrettably the current situation has been extended. Despite this, with the highly successful vaccine programme being rolled out, the future looks considerably brighter than this time last year. Hampshire, like the rest of the country, has had to deal with many challenges during the past 15 months, and I'm extremely proud to be living in a county where the whole community has rallied together to support the NHS, emergency services and other essential workers. Coronavirus may have kept us 2 metres apart, but in other ways it has brought us far closer. In the midst of these most challenging times, people have found new ways, new spaces and new ideas to come together as a community. But there is a risk that this renewed sense of community and togetherness will fade away as we emerge from lockdown and face the daunting challenges ahead. So our work is by no means done. 2 years ago, July 15th, was designated as Hampshire Day with the aim of providing an annual opportunity to remember Hampshire's rich history and how county life has evolved over time, as well as looking forward to the future. It is a day for local people to celebrate their own diverse communities, as well as sharing pride in Hampshire's heritage, culture, natural environment and people. I do hope, therefore, that you will join me in celebrating Hampshire Day and raising the Hampshire flag, when we can thank those on the wider front line who have worked tirelessly without visibility, from bus and train drivers, teachers, carers and council staff, to those delivering food to our homes and keeping the supermarkets open. The NHS and the nation could not function without them. Thank you to you all. Nigel Atkinson, Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Searle's House, Gar Street, Winchester.
Carolyn Seligman writes about water leaks. Sir, we hear much about Southern Water and their problems with leaks. In New Barn Lane, Crawley, a leak was first reported to Southern Water on April the 7th, 2021. I have spoken to Southern Water on 4 occasions. We still have the leak. Carolyn Seligman, New Barn Farm, Crawley.
And this one is about King's Walk and comes from Jonathan Shaw. I came to Hampshire 12 years ago and Winchester has always been my preferred shopping and visiting centre. But one part of it I never go to, the King's Walk area. I am delighted to hear it is to be redeveloped. I would hope that the developer chosen would not be a national developer whose motivation is likely to be primarily profit. I would hope the task went to a local developer with a feel for the local vernacular and an interest in the long-term usability of the site. Key to that is its beauty. This may sound like a costly option, but a development without beauty, a primarily functional development, is one that people won't want to go to, so will quickly fall into disuse. Winchester has a beautiful local style of architecture and building, which is why people visit it. The new development needs to draw inspiration from this and add to the attractions of Winchester for the long term. And that's from Jonathan Shaw of Church Lane, West Meon.
Terry Gould writes about Silver Hill. A thank you to councillors and officers who gave us another informative Central Winchester Regeneration Forum, a forum that was very long on process and very, very short on actual progress. However, one good bit of progress is Coitbury House that has been refurbished for 16 low-rent flats. Another step for later could be when St Clement's Surgery becomes available, do it up for housing as well, and link the two buildings with a shady, pleasant plaza. Why, though, is progress so slow, despite the forum presentation saying that the primary focus is developing strategic and economic cases for the business justification of the project? Despite 2.5 years having gone by since the council was elected and several hundred thousands of pounds of ratepayers' money already spent on consultants and false starts like grand designs for Coitbury House and King's Walk, we still do not have a plan for development. The Cabinet is being told that the preferred approach is to find a single developer who will do it all. With no plan in place, how can we tell what is going to be done, and how can a developer be held to account if there is nothing to judge against? So please, more actual progress, and try to do some proper project management, running, where possible, several things in parallel, rather than in sequence following a specified roadmap. Hurry up and open up as much of the Lower Brook Street as possible, now, and plant some trees as a start towards achieving carbon neutrality. Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And that finishes the letter, and we go over, please, to Hampshire Chronicle comment from Frieda.
This editorial comment is also about Silver Hill. It is headed Silver Hill, Time for Proper Archaeology. This newspaper has in the past urged the City Council to get on with the Silver Hill scheme, otherwise known as Central Winchester Regeneration and briefly Saxon Gate. Well, we were wrong. Had the council pressed on with a scheme 5 years ago, we would be potentially lumbered with a white elephant at a time of huge economic uncertainty. So, this newspaper now takes the view that COVID-19 has given everyone a chance to gather thoughts. It looks like the City Council will go with a single development partner as the best option for delivering the scheme. Many local people, including architects and, yes, developers, say there should be more than one to ensure a more dynamic approach. One thing this newspaper is now convinced of is that archaeology should be taken seriously. Professor Martin Biddle, the foremost expert, argues so on page 7 of this issue. Council officer Verian Lyons told a recent forum that nothing exciting has been found so far. The snag is, the City Council is not looking very hard. A proper dig would garner national and international attention and priceless publicity.
And here is First Person. It's entitled Roadmap to Where by Joanna Lewis. There are known unknowns and unknown unknowns. That was the famous phrase, of course, by which former US Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld shared with the world in 2002. Perhaps George Bush Jr.'s right-hand man during the Second Iraq War could be forgiven for simply applying management speak to the impossibility of predicting the future. History will judge not. There was an appalling lack of official foresight regarding plans for what came next. We have a right to a bit more precision and less nonchalance from those in government, whose decisions could mean the difference between life or death, though rarely for them. This is the daunting position we are in, with lockdown restrictions all but being removed in England next week and being left up to personal choice. Independence Day and a sense of moving significantly forward, maybe, or the folly of letting people free to decide if they want to catch one of the new variants. Of course, our PM is all heave-ho, hale and hearty, trying to steady the mothership. So seriousness is the situation. He's sporting his version of a side parting. We all want this roadmap to work. We want the economy up and running, but scrapping social distancing and making face masks optional, most people I know will be playing it safe and keeping their masks on in busy public places. I will be. I hate wearing a mask on the train. It feels particularly restricting. Glasses steam up, cheeks go red and your makeup runs. You arrive feeling cross, frazzled, and looking like the lead singer of The Cure. Other 80s gothic bands are available. But with at least one rogue virus revving up, and people now waiting 3 years for a hip replacement due to the backlog draining the NHS, we must still protect ourselves and each other. How will people react to the new permissible society is an interesting question. Clearly the pandemic has changed the rules of behaviour, but what is in its place? Have we worked a new code yet? I think all train carriages should be quiet zones. No mobile phones. We've got used to working from home. How are we going to adjust to other people's noise? Also, people have become generally more unpredictable. Some of us have come out of all of this more conformist, more cautious, and preferring plants to humans. Others have gone bananas and now don't give a monkeys. That was in evidence during the Wimbledon tennis tournament while working at home. It was so good, when looking up only very occasionally, of course, to see the rituals and the traditions being observed. Those players, so workmanlike, disciplined and focused. But for others, oh no, we had major tantrums, extended chats with the umpire, touchy-feely interactions with the crowd, and even sorties to the locker room between games. Same at Wembley Stadium last week. There was much that was predictable. Lots of the usual awful chanting, overreacting and shirt-grabbing Italian players and a heartbreak of a penalty shootout. But alongside the expected, we had the storming of the stands by a mob and a topless streaker called Adam who just wanted to have some fun. And he did, with the stewards too wobbly around the middle to catch him. So perhaps let's just try and be nice. Like Kehinde Solu, a lovely guard on Southwest trains, who added to her announcement the suggestion that we all be kind and smile a little. And is it just me? But aren't William and Kate doing their best and setting a good example on this front? The glimpse we had of Prince George after the England goal has been the best thing on TV this year. And how lovely to have had a month free of the Sussexes' venom, envy and passive aggressives. Long may their parental leave rule over us. And now we'll have a look at Belgarum's alternative take on the news. Can you start us off, David? There are three items.
Yes, this one is about the mural artist Hendog. They have been coined Winchester's Banksy, and now Hendog is hoping to help other people express themselves. The artist has captured public attention for statement murals over recent months. Now Hendog is realising an ambition to provide others with a space to express themselves. A mural called Crayola Boy has been created at Unit 12 in Wennell, with plenty of space for others to add their own artwork. Hendog said, "I've been working over the past couple of months to provide a safe and legal space for people to express themselves. Well, I finally managed to make it happen. With the help of Jamie," that's Jamie Robinson, "at Unit 12, we've set up free walls in their garden that is accessible to everyone during opening hours. It is a big moment for the city to finally start embracing all forms of expression." Hendog, alongside Jamie, has recently launched a crowdfunder to host affordable graffiti school classes. "I've also been running classes to teach kids how to paint, so it's done properly and respectfully. I'm trying to get as many people to know about this wall as possible, so the space is as useful as possible." Hendog previously created a mural for the community food pantry at Unit 12 of a young child holding a sandwich.
This is a Packham visit, a mixed blessing. Thousands of people will have enjoyed naturalist Chris Packham's walk alongside the River Itchen. The Journey, broadcast on BBC South last Friday, explored his past as he came to terms with Asperger's syndrome and how connecting with nature on the river saved his life. Chris, with only a handheld camera, met wild swimmers and local people walking their dogs. At Compton Lock, he met villagers who once again flooded the water meadows, restored in 2000. The programme highlighted the revival of the ages-old farming practice, but also was a mixed blessing for locals. Wayne Lawton, chairman of Twyford Parish Council, told Belgarum, "I am sure you are aware of the problems we had last year at Compton Lock with unsocial behaviour and huge quantities of litter. Luckily this year, up to now, we have no serious issues with respect to behaviour, but litter remains a constant problem." Wild swimming at the lock itself, along the navigation canal and indeed in the Itchen, is the attraction for many people. This is a mixed blessing, as learning about the history of how the meadows were used for agriculture in days gone by, as well, just enjoying its tranquil setting, is something everyone should experience. However, two words, respect and responsibility, need to be observed when visiting the lock. With regret, this is often ignored by a good number of visitors, mostly the young.
Here's the third Belgarum item, headlined Spotlight on the City's Buttercross. And it's got a picture of a pink chair sitting high up on the Buttercross Memorial. Many years ago, boisterous fresher students seeking to impress their new friends at the university damaged the Buttercross by climbing up it. It seems the activity may still be being practiced. Ian Tate took this photo a few days ago of a pink chair placed on the medieval structure. Someone must either have had very long arms or climbed up the stonework to place the chair. The damage inflicted last time was eventually recouped from the culprits. Belgarum has asked the City Council for a comment. On a happier note, Chris Brown sent in a photo taken on Saturday of the Buttercross with a hot air balloon several hundred feet up in the sky appearing to be poised on the tip of the monument below. Looks very nice there. And now we have the week's announcements. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 16th of July at 5:09 a.m. and begins at 9:13 p.m. On Wednesday the 21st of July, it ends at 5:16 a.m. and begins at 9:07 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired or would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we go over to David to continue with items of general news.
This short article is entitled Tools Stolen. Officers investigating a burglary in South Wanston are appealing for witnesses. The raid was at a business premises at Bellevue at the north end of West Hill Road between 12:30 a.m. and 1 a.m. on Tuesday, June the 29th. Burglars forced their way in and a large quantity of tools were stolen. Officers have conducted inquiries and are now turning to the public for any information that may help their investigation. Anyone with information is asked to phone 101.
Group plans to repeat history 108 years on. It has gone full circle for Winchester Musical Opera Society as the group gears up for a show. In May 1913, Winchester Amateur Operatic Society made its maiden voyage performing the favourite Pirates of Penzance to packed audiences in Winchester's Guildhall. Now, 108 years later, the same society, now called Winchester Musical Opera Society, is about to embark on its first performance since the pandemic with the same show. The Review of 1913, describing the brand new society, said, "One of the most inspiring sights in the world is the launching of a ship. It is an event which is always fraught with great anxiety. In all its pride and beauty, with flags and pennons gaily fluttering, the good ship stands in dock, a monument to labour, great forethought, patient skill, mathematical science, and is ready to take the water." This statement could very well be also applied to WMOS's 2021 production of the well-loved Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. With a rehearsal and audition process conducted via Zoom, the society has had to rehearse outside, in bubbles, and often fully masked, a very different and challenging process compared to normal. As opening night, July the 20th, gets closer, the good ship WMOS is ready to hit the waves again. Excuse me. And get back to the stage. The good ship WMOS is ready to hit the waves again and get back to the stage. The society was formed in 1912 by members of the adult choir at Winchester Cathedral, although the idea of forming a Winchester-based Gilbert and Sullivan Society had been mooted earlier. A committee was formed and a unanimous decision was made that their first production ought to be Pirates of Penzance. They auditioned enthusiastic Winchester residents and picked their cast. An anonymous writer points out in his review that, to use a theatrical term, there were no duds, such as one often sees in amateur performances, and the absence of any favouritism was all in favour of the society and its success. The group very much hopes 2021 audiences will feel exactly the same.
Proposed cuts will hit the vulnerable. Proposed cuts to public health will hit the most vulnerable in the Winchester district, a meeting heard. Councillor John Tippett Cooper raised the issue of the proposed £2 million cuts by Hampshire County Council to services, including health visiting, school nursing, and also the substance misuse hub in Winchester. Councillor Tippett Cooper told full council that the hub was a vital service that supports some of the most vulnerable in our district and is the only hub in Hampshire being targeted for closure. Winchester City Council have worked tirelessly to support vulnerable people with addictions into housing over the last year, and amongst other things, closing this hub is likely to make it harder to support people to retain that housing. He called on the City Council to urge the County Council to review its decision to cut this service and recognise that the savings will be outweighed by the social costs. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "The Hampshire County Council proposal to close the Substance Misuse Treatment Centre in Winchester is based on having the second lowest number of clients accessing the treatment centre, 276, with the lowest numbers in Andover, 215. The suggestion is to replace the treatment centre in Winchester with smaller satellite clinics and drop-in services based within local venues and established homelessness premises. The voluntary homelessness sector in Winchester have for some time successfully introduced satellite health services and outreach work within their premises. And so it is conceivable that this may be an effective option for engagement with homeless clients, especially those rough sleeping. However, substance misuse is not just faced by homeless people. It also affects many other households, including council tenants who may not wish to access treatment this way. It is unlikely, as HCC suggest, that Winchester residents will travel to the next local treatment centre in Eastleigh. It will instead be a barrier for vulnerable Winchester residents seeking support with substance misuse issues, putting them at greater risk. There is no doubt that the suggested HCC commissioning and public health budget cuts will make it harder to sustain council tenancies, prevent homelessness, and to support people out of rough sleeping.
This article is accompanied by a picture of a house in Winnell, which has been fire damaged, and an inset picture of a man called Leslie David Gray. A man who set fire to his family home in an attempt to take his own life was battling an eviction order. Leslie David Gray ignited a sofa and a piece of cloth at a property in St Martin's Close, Winnell, before going to sleep on December the 30th, 2019. He was awoken by screams from a neighbour and climbed out of a bedroom window to escape. Gray had been served with an eviction notice in August, which he was fighting. The property belonged to Winchester City Council. On Monday, the 36-year-old of Winnell Manor Road was jailed for 28 months at Winchester Crown Court after he previously pleaded guilty to arson. Prosecuting, Peter Bride said, a member of the public had called police to say that their friend, the defendant, had set fire to the house and was seen trying to climb out of the window to escape. The court was told that Gray had told a friend that he was going to set fire to the house, and shortly afterwards they heard the fire alarm going off. In a police interview, Gray said that he had lit some candles in the sitting room, fallen asleep and woke up to realise what was going on, and in a sleepy state climbed out onto the roof. But an investigation later revealed that he had set fire to a sofa and a piece of cloth in the kitchen. The fire service said that the blaze had been started by a naked flame. It had caused £21,509 of damage, and a cat was found dead inside. Mr. Pride said that the incident had underlined tones of planning and revenge in view of the eviction proceedings that were ongoing. In mitigation, Richard Martin said, it appears the admission of his father into a care home was when things went drastically wrong. Mr. Martin told the court that Gray has a history of substance abuse and depression, which was present at the time of the event, and has since suffered with PTSD as a result of the fire. He continued, this defendant was attempting to take his own life and clearly made a pretty substantial start, but for the shouting of that resident, who knows what might have happened. Mr. Martin said that Gray is no longer using cocaine and has stopped drinking alcohol, adding, it seems there are all the signs that he is going to put his previous existence behind him.
Leaving. He will be missed by his hundreds of regular customers. Glenn Davis, who has been selling meat from his van on Winchester Market, usually on Middlebrook Street, for the last 25 years or more, is leaving to start a new venture in Wales. The butcher, born and bred in Winchester, kept his clients supplied with meat and eggs during the early days of the pandemic.
School sends pupils home as cases soar. Another Winchester school has been badly hit by COVID-19 and the government rules. Western Primary School in Full Flood has sent home children in two-year groups. All its canteen staff are self-isolating, a parent has told the Chronicle. One angry parent said on Tuesday morning, COVID is ripping through the school. But why is this necessary? What a nightmare. I'm sick to death of these stupid rules. Either we have freedom or not. What good is it having a vaccine if we don't trust it? My daughter has missed half of her school education, and children do not get unwell from COVID. People talk about balance, but what about my daughter's education, impacted by something that barely affects children? This is not Western schools' fault. It is the government rules that are not keeping pace. King's School has also switched to part remote learning as COVID cases soar, and it has insufficient for normal classroom teaching.
This article tells us that Dame Judi Dench is coming to Winchester again to hold a fundraising talk, and is accompanied by a picture of Dame Judi talking to John Miller the last time she was here. Dame Judi Dench is coming again to Winchester to help raise funds for the local branch of Home Start. She will talk about her career on stage and screen and life in lockdown in conversation with her friend and biographer, John Miller, from Bishop Sutton near Alsford. Public tickets for the Theatre Royal event go on sale on Tuesday, July 13th. The price will be £25 and staff are expecting heavy demand once this news is shared in the media. The charity says it is a real coup to have secured Dame Judy's visit and it is grateful to Mr. Miller for his support in making it happen. Dame Judi has not been on the Theatre Royal's Winchester stage since 2008, when she appeared in Great Eccentrics, a dramatic recital written and produced by John Miller. However, in 2016, she helped raise funds for Home Start when she sold out the Guildhall, and she has not let the grass grow under her feet since. Their latest platform conversation will examine the highlights of her career, on stage and screen, and during the lockdown on Zoom. We are very grateful for the sponsorship from William Heller Associates, which has enabled us to stage such an important event, said Home Start Winchester Chairman Barry Page. We must raise 90% of our income from fundraising, donations and gifts so that we can maintain our support for vulnerable families in this area. Judi Dench, in conversation with John Miller, will take place at the Theatre Royal, Winchester, on Sunday, October the 24th at 7 p.m. and will be followed by a book signing. Tickets at £25 can be obtained from the Theatre Royal, Winchester box office or at www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk/what's on. Alternatively, call 01962 840 440.
Village Fete sees more than 800 people through the gates. This article has four very lovely photographs attached to it. One shows that there were three councillors present, councillors Caroline Horrell, Patrick Cunningham and Stephen Godfrey, and they seem to be enjoying themselves. Two young people are sitting on the grass enjoying pancakes. Fresh crepes were available, pancakes to you and me. Then there is a photograph of a man with a huge wheelbarrow full of rubber ducks for the duck floating competition. And finally, a lot of people sitting around enjoying the performances by someone who is from the circus. Despite the uncertain weather and ever-changing COVID regulations, the Wanston Fete went ahead as hoped. The day began with rain, but the clouds parted and the sun came out as people started queuing outside the gardens of the old house. The location was once again made available by the generosity of Mr. and Mrs. McHale. After last year's fete was cancelled by COVID, many people were clearly happy not only to enjoy all the traditional fun, but also to get out of their houses and meet old friends, and new. More than 800 people sanitised their hands and passed through the gates during the afternoon. Visitors enjoyed all the usual stalls, buying books, bric-a-brac, board games, china, cakes, clothes, plants and jewellery. The children exhausted themselves in the bouncy castle and the inflatable assault course, kindly donated by Alfred's Castles. Others splatted rats and bobbed for boats. Throughout the afternoon, Circus Wessex entertained families with their juggling, stilts and fire-eating shows. Few could resist the bottle tombola, the gin bowler as it was called, and even the teddy tombola. Many invested in the grand draw in the hope of winning a new bicycle or £100 cash, a Fitbit, a pressure washer and much more, including a whole smoked trout, all kindly donated by local people. The duck race down the River Deva was as competitive as ever, with more than 200 entries. Organisers have thanked the committee, stallholders and volunteers whose hard work made the day possible, as well as those who came to enjoy themselves and support Holy Trinity Church.
TV crews set up at 17th century house near city. The picturesque setting of Shawford Park House is set to be at the centre of a hit TV show. A team has been seen setting up their base in Shawford Road, ready to use the 17th century building. It's believed that the filming is for the series Billions, starring Damian Lewis, Maggie Siff and Paul Giamatti. In a letter to local residents, production company VFPS1 said, "All the filming will take place within the house. However, to service the location, we will be constructing a unit base for our facility vehicles in the field opposite the entrance gates." And that's what an enormous picture is of, a flat bit in a field with obviously waiting for things to be parked on it. The actual filming will take place between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. from Tuesday the 13th to Sunday the 18th of July. During this time, there will be a number of large vehicle movements from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. each morning, and then again from 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. as crew leave. Residents have also been urged to avoid parking along the south side of Finch's Lane in the vicinity of the Elms. Billions is an American television drama series.
This announces a choral workshop. Winchester Music Club is staging a choral workshop for the first time in more than a year. Its members are delighted that choral singing can resume after over a year of enforced isolation. The workshop will feature Vivaldi's Gloria, a hymn of praise divided into 12 relatively brief cantata-like movements. It will be at St Michael's Church, Culver Road, the Winchester College Church, on Saturday, July the 24th.
Water firm hit with record fine for pollution. Southern Water has been fined a record £90 million for dumping raw sewage into rivers and coastal waters in Hampshire and other parts of the South Coast. The company admitted almost 7,000 illegal discharges from its wastewater treatment works between 2010 and 2015, including several sites in the Southampton area. Up to 21 billion litres of untreated sewage are thought to have flowed into protected waters. The offences were discovered during the Environment Agency's largest ever criminal investigation, which began after shellfish were found to be contaminated with E. coli. The case saw all the pollution offences brought together in one prosecution at Canterbury Crown Court. Mr. Justice Johnson said the offences showed a shocking and wholesale disregard for the environment, delicate ecosystems in the Solent and other areas, human health, and businesses that depend on the vitality of the coastal waters. He added, "It is necessary to sentence the company for the totality of the offences to which it has pleaded guilty." But even that does not reflect the defendant's criminality. That is because the offences are aggravated by its previous persistent pollution of the environment over very many years. The total volume of untreated sewage involved was between 16 and 21 billion litres, equivalent to 7,400 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Water companies are permitted to discharge untreated wastewater into the environment during periods of heavy rain to prevent sewers backing up. However, the agency found that on thousands of occasions, untreated sewage had left Southern Water sites through this route during periods of lower rainfall. Chair of the agency, Emma Howard Boyd, said, "With nature in crisis, no one should profit from undermining environmental laws." This sentence shows fines for environmental offences are starting to reach the same level as the highest fines for crimes in financial services. And that is good. There is growing scrutiny of the environmental performance of companies all over the world. This sends an important message to global investors that England expects businesses to perform to the highest standards. Like all water companies, Southern Water has a responsibility to operate in accordance with permitted conditions and to protect against serious pollution.
Celebrations streamed to the world from City's Cathedral. The Friends of Winchester Cathedral broke fresh ground at the weekend when their annual festival service was live-streamed across the world. Messages later came into the Friends' office from Canada and the United States, saying how privileged the overseas members felt at being able to join in the Winchester service for the first time. The video and sound equipment that the cathedral now uses to stream all of its services is one of the latest projects to be funded by the Friends, which has been celebrating their 90th anniversary this year. In the congregation for the festival Evensong, which was based on the Friends' first cathedral service in 1931, were several members of the Friends who were also celebrating being in their 90s. The most senior, Jane, Lady Portal, is 96, and she became a member of the Friends in 1942, living at the deanery as a stepdaughter of the then Dean, Gordon Selwyn. Also present at the Festival Evensong were the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson and the Mayor of Winchester, Vivian Achwal. In her sermon, the present Dean, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, talked of the founding spirit of the Friends in 1931. Firstly, to bind together all those who love Winchester Cathedral and to bring others as far as possible to appreciate and enjoy it. Secondly, to help the Dean and Chapter to do what is necessary to preserve it. Dean Catherine said this 90-year-old vision was striking in its contemporary approach. The cathedral is a place for all people and inspires love for many reasons in addition to faith. People love the heritage and sense of connection with shared history, love the arts, the Christian and human values, simply love the sense of something beyond ordinary comprehension. The Dean, Vice Dean, Canon Rowley Ream and the precentor, Andy Trenier, together with the cathedral choir under the direction of Andrew Lumsden and trustees of the Friends, processed to the St Swithin's Shrine in the east end of the cathedral, where the charity's chairman, Bruce Parker, laid a posy of flowers. As the long procession returned to the west end of the cathedral, he laid a second posy on St Swithin's grave in the old minster area of the cathedral grounds. And there are two photographs, one taken of the Dean of Winchester, Bruce Parker, the Mayor and the Lord Lieutenant standing outside the west door, and a lovely picture of the Dean in front of the altar with the choir ceiling and everything behind her, and a tapestry of flames along the altar's edge.
Garden to be lost. A wonderful cottage garden will soon be built over after plans for four new houses were approved. A bungalow on Springvale Road will be knocked down to make space, a committee heard. Local City Councillor Jane Rutter said the bungalow was lived in by Alex Fry, who was a great gardener and wrote for 50 years in the parish magazine How to Garden Through the Seasons. His garden was a wonderful example of a cottage garden. So it's a sadness we are going to see it built over, but that is the way of the world these days. She added, "It's a shame this perfectly good bungalow is going to be demolished. It should be retained and repurposed, but that is not in our policy at the moment. But I hope we will seriously consider putting it in the new local plan." There were 8 objections, with neighbours citing a loss of privacy, overlooking, and the fact it would be cramped. The committee agreed the plan, but also to remove permitted developments rights, so any future proposal must come back to the planning department at the City Council.
Preschool praised after being told to improve. There's a lovely picture here with three adults and quite a large group of children, and they're all wearing Wellingtons, looking very happy. I wonder what they've been doing needing Wellingtons. A Bishop's Waltham preschool has been praised by inspectors after it was deemed to require improvement. Lilypad in the Park is progressing, according to Ofsted, after it was rated as good in a recent inspection, just 2 years after it was deemed to require improvement. In May 2019, the Education Watchdog raised safeguarding and welfare concerns with this provision and ordered it to take action. An interim visit in September 2020 found that action had been taken, with checks carried out to ensure all committee members are suitable to fulfil their roles and keep children safe. In May this year, inspectors returned and have praised the preschool, which is based at the Pavilion in Ho Road Recreation Ground.
In memory of former college vice-principal, a tree has been planted in memory of former vice-principal of Sparsholt College, the late Ian Hamilton, who died in June last year. The tree, a wild cherry, Prunus avium piena, or plana, sorry, was planted by his wife, Sue Hamilton, and her daughters, Helen and Caroline, and members of the family, in the college grounds overlooking the Hampshire Downs near the house where they lived on the college campus. Mr. Hamilton was appointed college vice-principal in 1973 and retired in 1991, completing 18 years in the post. In addition to supporting the principal, he was responsible for the management of the college farms and estates, as well as teaching students. Students held him with the highest respect for his attention to detail, as well as his technical knowledge and skills. His colleagues appreciated his loyalty and support, as well as his sense of humour. A small group of family and close friends recently met at the college for an event to celebrate Ian's life. This included the tree planting, scattering of his ashes, and the repositioning of a refurbished park bench, which Ian and his wife had presented to the college on his retirement. Former colleagues spoke of his time as a student at Seal Hayne College in Devon, his work for the Crown Commissioners in Uganda, as well as his time on the staff of Plumpton Agricultural College in East Sussex, and his work at Sparsholt College. Mrs. Hamilton and her family said they are most grateful for permission to plant this memorial tree in the college grounds, and there's a lovely picture of Mrs. Sue Hamilton with her two daughters with spades preparing to plant.
New homes officially opened by the Mayor. This article is accompanied by a picture of the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Atchwell, just having cut the red ribbon in front of number 62 of the development, and of course Steve Brine, the RMP, was standing by as well. Winchester City Council marked the completion of its latest housing scheme with an official opening by the Mayor and Steve Brine, MP. Burnett Lane in Kingsworthy features 35 new affordable homes with a range of different housing options. These include affordable rent and shared ownership tenures. Drew Smith Limited handed control of the site to the council at the end of June, and the project was completed on time. Steve Brine, MP, said, "This is a continuation of the City Council's new homes programme. They're nice-looking houses in a great setting, but even better was to chat to some of the hopeful new owners and tenants who were just beaming with excitement at the prospect of a new home in their own community." City Council Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, added, "We're thrilled to be opening this fantastic development as planned this summer. Hookbit Farm is a great example of a small development providing affordable homes."
Trust pays tribute to nation's hero. The trust which runs Winchester Hospital has unveiled three memorial benches in honour of Captain Sir Tom Moore. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust has celebrated the NHS's 73rd birthday by honouring the veterans' contribution to NHS charities. The benches have been positioned at the Trust's site in Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke, and were funded by Hampshire Hospitals Charity, which received a portion of the donation that Captain Tom made, with HHFT wanting to ensure his contribution was remembered. Chief Executive Alex Whitfield said, "All of us were so moved by Captain Tom's incredible efforts, and we wanted to mark this in a permanent way at each of our hospitals." The funds he raised for NHS charities were distributed to NHS trusts across the UK, and it's wonderful we have been able to use these to support staff. The benches situated in each hospital's grounds are a perfect choice.
Travellers leave toy pile. A group of travellers who had set up camp in a Winchester car park have now moved on, leaving a pile of children's toys behind. Families had been at the Cattle Market car park, Worthy Lane, taking over at least half of the spaces available. The group left last Wednesday after an order was granted by Basingstoke Magistrates Court to remove the vehicles from the land. Winchester City Council stood bailiffs up to prepare for the removal, but travellers had moved off the car park at around 8 p.m. The group left behind a pile of children's toys, but the City Council has said that it has since cleared the site. On Friday, the authority undertook a welfare visit and attempted to get the group to move on voluntarily. In a comment to the Chronicle, a council spokesperson said on Friday, "We are aware of a group of travellers who have set up at the cattle market and have been to speak to them this afternoon. We have to check there are no issues in the group that means they are unable to move on, and we always try to agree that the travellers move on voluntarily."
Cycle death inquest. An inquest has opened into the death of a cyclist in a collision near Winchester. David Davenport was riding along Woodman Lane, Sparsholt, on June the 8th when he was involved in a collision with a blue Mini Cooper at the crossroads with Sarum Road. Mr. Davenport, 59, of Archers Road, Eastleigh, was taken to Southampton General Hospital but died on June the 16th. An inquest was opened by Area Coroner Jason Pegg, who said Mr. Davenport was out on a bike ride with his friend when a collision occurred at the junction of Woodman Lane and Sarum Road. Mr. Davenport suffered fatal injuries and was admitted to Southampton General Hospital. A post-mortem was carried out and cause of death was given as traumatic brain injury as a result of a road traffic collision. Mr. Pegg adjourned the hearing and a full inquest will take place on March the 10th next year.
New Vice-Chancellor poised to take on top role. Very nice picture of a smiling Professor Sarah Greer. Winchester University has appointed a new Vice-Chancellor. Professor Sarah Greer will assume the role in January 2022, following the Reverend Professor Elizabeth Stewart, who stepped in after the retirement of Joy Carter in March. Professor Greer is Deputy Vice-Chancellor and Provost at Winchester University, where she's worked for 6 years. An English literature graduate of the University of Cambridge, she went on to qualify as a chartered accountant, and then, after a further degree in law, as a barrister. She said, "I am delighted to be joining the University of Winchester as Vice-Chancellor in 2022. I was drawn to Winchester's values and ethos and its rich heritage of educational excellence and inclusion. I look forward to working with staff, students and the Board of Governors to ensure that Winchester thrives and succeeds in its mission to deliver an outstanding education for its students, enabling them to flourish as individuals and to make a real difference in the wider world. Professor Greer has held a range of academic and leadership positions, including Pro-Vice-Chancellor, Deputy Pro-Vice-Chancellor, Dean and Head of School. She is also a National Teaching Fellow of the Higher Education Authority. Her areas of research are the law of trusts and women's legal history. She is an accredited mediator in workplace disputes. Current Acting Vice-Chancellor, the Reverend Professor Elizabeth Stewart, said, "Professor Greer has a real affinity to Winchester's values and culture. She brings a wealth of experience and a clear vision and focus to help the university thrive in a post-COVID world. On behalf of all staff and students, we very much look forward to welcoming her to our community." Alan Lovell, Chairman of the Board of Governors, added, "The standard of candidates was exceptionally high, but the board was unanimous in their decision to appoint Professor Greer. She has an excellent track record of leadership in higher education, and we are confident she will spearhead the University of Winchester in its mission to be a beacon for educational excellence, sustainability, and social justice."
Three generations of firemen. It's not every day you see three generations of a firefighting family around the same hose. But that was the case when Bishop's Waltham Fire Station visited Upham Preschool. There's a photograph in which you can see three members of the Cole family practising their extinguishing skills together. The eldest one is holding the hose, but he's got his son beside him watching, and his little grandson holding on to his arm to try and steer the hose. The fire station posted to Twitter, "This morning the crew visited the children at the village preschool Upham to carry out some community education. A fun morning, and there was even a photo opportunity of the three generations of Coles." The pupil's letter sent the firefighters a handmade thank you card, which the fire station shared to Twitter, saying, "Thank you to the children of the village preschool Upham for your card. Great to know that you enjoyed your visit."
Winchester Man's Memoir of a Peaceful Afghanistan. This article is accompanied by a picture of Christopher Balfour at home in St. Cross, Winchester. It was an adventure from another age. Now, Winchester resident Christopher Balfour has turned his journey to Afghanistan in the 1950s into a book. It is a historical record of the Central Asian country in peaceful times before it was wrecked by invasion and civil war from the late 1970s onwards. Now it looks as if the shaky relative peace since the US-led invasion of 20 years ago has been undermined by the withdrawal of NATO forces and the resurgence of the Taliban militants. Afghanistan, at a time of peace, tells the story of the journey of three young men from Cambridge University in the summer of 1955 to the Boharak Plain in Afghanistan and back, some 15,000 miles. Christopher Balfour, then 21 years old, was the mechanic who looked after the borrowed Land Rover. The book is a diary and contains many fascinating photos of the countryside and people before Western influence started to be felt. Mr. Balfour of Clausentum Road, St. Cross, said, "The book came about when Afghans now in England realised that I still had some pictures of the 1955 journey. None of them knew what the country was like, in many cases, before they were born." The 120-page hardback book is available, price £22, from P&G Wells on College Street, or from Mr. Balfour on email, cjjbalfour, one word, at yahoo.co.uk.
Free parking at reopened car park. For a while, motorists have been parking for free at a recently reopened Winchester car park, because no ticket machines have been installed. The car park just off North Walls has around 80 spaces and was closed for many months to allow for flood prevention engineering work at the back of the nearby Trinity Centre. It reopened at least a week ago, but without the ticket machine. The price board is still covered over, All-day parking would usually be £7.30, and an hour would be 80p. One parking driver, who asked not to be named, said something has gone wrong. Perhaps the factory was hit by COVID, and there is a backlog. It won't last forever. No, I don't feel guilty. I've been paying for parking in Winchester for 30 years, so a little discount doesn't go amiss. The Chronicle asked Winchester City Council for comment, and in a statement it said, Derngate Car Park is owned by Hampshire County Council. The City Council's operating lease ended in December 2020, and the car park is now managed fully by the County Council. On Monday evening, in a statement, Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Highway Operations, said, Derngate Car Park is currently closed, and there are temporary signs and cones in place to advise the public that it is not open. This will be a County Council-run car park in due course, and we are currently finalising the contractual arrangements for the parking machines and pay-by-phone parking. It is anticipated the car park will be operational in a couple of months' time. It was unclear if the County Council had closed the car park on Monday afternoon, following inquiries by the Chronicle, or whether it has considered it being closed even though it was being used by dozens of motorists. There have been no signs indicating it was closed. A visit on Monday evening showed a closed sign lying by the side of the entrance and hardly visible to drivers. On Tuesday, the county added, I confirm that Derngate Car Park remains closed. It has been closed while flood alleviation works and also building works on nearby Trinity House have been undertaken. The surface of the car park still needs to be reinstated, and there is also a need for some minor landscaping work. Highways officers are currently arranging for more robust measures to be introduced to reinforce the fact that the car park is shut.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, David Baldwin.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. Thank you.